Hi, this is Canon Explorer of Light Ken Skloot, and you're listening to the Petapixel Photography Podcast with Sharky James. Enjoy!
Welcome to the Petapixel Photography Podcast, episode 122. The Chicago Cubs win the World Series and prove good photography matters. In this episode, Chicago's papers prove the importance of good photography. Luminar is pretty darn awesome. The reason why Apple ditched the SD card slot. Top photographer is out. Universal search comes to Photoshop as users try not to fall asleep. And an update on those foolish filmmakers in Yellowstone. All that and more in episode 122 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Thank you so much, Ken, for opening the show. I greatly appreciate it, brother. Ken Skloot is a true craftsman, having honed his skill in photography over the last four decades, and this Phoenix-based Canon Explorer of Light creates stunning images that are truly awe-inspiring. Ken teaches workshops and travels extensively throughout the world, where he captures amazing photographs of the people and landscapes that he encounters. Some of Ken's clients include the National Hot Rod Association, the United States Army, Sports Illustrated, Oakley, Epson, and Kodak, just to name a few. I especially love Ken's epic weather photos and his beautiful images of the Aurora Borealis, and I think you would as well, and I'd love for you to see them. To do that, head on over to his website at kenskloot.com. That's KenSklute.com. And I'd like to thank you all for joining us here in episode 122 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. We appreciate you all so much, and thank you all for subscribing, rating, and reviewing us in iTunes or wherever else you listen to us. And as always, we appreciate hitting that subscribe button so you don't miss a single episode, as well as telling all your friends on social media and elsewhere and helping to get the word out about this show. Okay, with that, I'm your host, Sharky James. Let's hit it. If you watched Game 7 of the World Series this year, wow, what an amazing game that was, right? Two extremely talented teams battled hard, and after a 108-year drought, the Chicago Cubs finally pulled it out. If you've been listening to this show for a while now, you know that while I love shooting sports, I'm not exactly a huge sports fan anymore. And that's mostly because I just don't have the time to properly follow along and call myself a true fan. It would be disingenuous if I did. But seeing as how I'm from the north side of Chicago myself, I started following the Cubs to the extent that I could this year. And I'm happy for all the lifelong Chicago Cubs fans, including my parents, who've literally waited all their lives for this day. As photographers, we appreciate great imagery, and some photographs just stand out in your mind. You know, the kind that you see on the front page of your city's newspapers when something momentous like this happens. For Chicago, still a two-newspaper town, that means the storied Chicago Tribune and the Chicago Sun-Times. And if you're in the Windy City, as it's called, or saw the coverage online, you saw night and day coverage on the two newspapers there. On the front page of the Tribune was a photo by staff photojournalist Brian Casella, which shows five players who are mostly airborne, enjoying the moment. And you know what? It's the kind of image that you could totally see being turned into a statue and being placed outside Wrigley Field for people to enjoy for many, many years to come. But in contrast to that, on the front page of the Chicago Sun-Times is a photo that is disconnected, uninteresting, and is frankly forgettable. And this really shouldn't be surprising, considering back in 2013, the Sun-Times famously laid off its entire staff of photojournalists and decided to train its reporters on how to shoot better photos with their iPhones. Not even cameras, iPhones. Something that is so preposterous that if I didn't know it to actually be true, I would think that someone was playing a joke on me. You don't get rid of your entire staff of photojournalists, and then suggest that you could replace their photographs with photos that were shot on iPhones by reporters. I mean, come on. The Chicago Tribune values great photography. The Sun-Times, not so much. And it would be really hard for people to argue against that. So what they did was they used a wire photo by Associated Press photographer David J. Phillip, who's actually an excellent, incredibly talented photographer, and this really wasn't his fault at all. being a former photojournalist myself, I can tell you when there are once in a lifetime opportunities, such as the World Series, you keep shooting. You might have hundreds of horrible photos just to get those one or two great iconic images. So apparently they picked one of his outtakes and thought it was good. And that was a bad decision. From where he was shooting, he just wasn't able to get a shot like Casella did. And you know, this is an important truth in photography. You can only shoot what is presented to you. If you're photographing your kid's peewee baseball game and there's no great plays and the action happens elsewhere, there's nothing you can really do about that. When it comes to this front page debacle, though, I blame the Sun-Times editors here. Surely there was a better photo to choose from that night. Even if it was an action shot, that would have been preferable to a bland image of the post-game jubilation. I understand they wanted to use a photo of the players celebrating, but if it's a horrible photo, that's just not doing anything for anyone. They would have sold a ton of newspapers if they had an amazing image on the front page, rather than a really horrible, horrible photo. And the people of Chicago agree with me because the Tribune was sold out everywhere while there were stacks upon stacks of Sun-Times right there and no one buying them, or at least a lot less people. You know, when something big like this happens and you buy the newspaper, you want the one that's got the great image, the one that if you wanted to, you could frame and put up on your wall. And the photo that was on the front page of the Sun-Times wasn't exactly something that you'd actually want to see on your wall for a long, long time. The one on the Tribune, though, definitely. It's a beautiful photograph. Like I said, I think they're going to make it a statue someday, and it's going to be right outside Wrigley Field. It is that good. The lesson here is that photo selection is very important. Most of us are never going to have the cover of a major daily newspaper, but we can choose what photos that we put online that represent our work. And if photography is your business, you choose which images your clients get to see. Not just on your website, but when you deliver those. You know, they say that they want to see all your photos, but in my opinion, and in the opinion of many, I think it's best to only show your best work. Because poor images give them reason to criticize your work and then doubt your abilities. You know, the great masters from centuries ago whose paintings hang in museums around the world didn't show the world those paintings that led up to that masterpiece. You know, many painted those things several times until they got it right. The late, great Ansel Adams didn't let us see prints that didn't quite come out right in his darkroom after all. You know, we forget these things. Many throw everything online that they shoot when they should perhaps be a little bit more selective. Choice is key, and the Sun-Times made a horrible one back in 2013, and ever since then, you see goofy decisions when it comes to their photography. That same year, the Chicago Blackhawks won the Stanley Cup, and they used a tiny snapshot on the front page that was very uninspiring, not exciting at all, while the Tribune used the kind of photo that you would expect to see on the front page. So good photography matters, but choosing the right photo is also important. And the Chicago Sun-Times has found that out in grand fashion. The photo that was on the front page of the Chicago Tribune is going to be the one that people remember for decades upon decades. It's not going to be the one that was on the Chicago Sun-Times. Next. As I told you all back in episode 117, MacFun, makers of the awesome HDR program called Aurora, has been hard at work on a raw image processor that they call Luminar, and now it's officially available to pre-order. I've been putting the software through its paces in advance of the launch, and I gotta say, for a first version, it is extremely impressive. And you guys all know how no-nonsense I am. If it was horrible, I would definitely tell you. Luminar, not horrible. In my mind, it's a breath of fresh air, and that's really not surprising because MacFun really has its ear to the ground and they know what photographers want. I mean, look at Aurora HDR, for instance. A lot of HDR programs out there are a hot mess and really cause people to do things to their photography that maybe isn't exactly pleasing to the eye. Aurora, amazing. I'm predicting right here and now that Luminar is going to be MacFun's biggest hit. You know, Aurora, huge. People really wanted that and needed that. But what they need even more is dealing with processing raw photos and have a great full-featured program to do that in. That's a lot of fun, too. You know, I've used Lightroom for years and have hundreds of thousands of images in its catalogs. It's gotten incredibly slow, in my opinion, and just isn't fun to use anymore. I know it's for getting work done, but what if you could also have fun doing so? Well, in my opinion, that is what Luminar also brings to the table here. You can get work done, and it also doesn't feel incredibly monotonous like it does with Lightroom. I found myself actually enjoying processing images again. You know, I was having a little bit of fun, and it was just a lot more intuitive inside Luminar than using Lightroom. I don't get that kind of feeling when I use Lightroom. Lightroom feels all about work. You know, if you were to design a RAW processor here in 2016, this is how you would do it. There are so many things in this program. For a straight out of the gate first version, it's just unbelievable. You can tell they took their time with this and made sure that everything was in there that needed to be in there. Now, it's important to note that this isn't a Lightroom replacement just yet, because this isn't going to catalog your photos. So if you're culling in Photo Mechanic, let's say, or even in Lightroom, Luminar would be great for doing your processing of your images, but you're not going to be cataloging them in it. What's awesome, though, is that in addition to using this as a standalone program, you can use it as a plugin right there in Lightroom. So I think a lot of people are going to use Lightroom, as they have in the past, to catalog their photos, but then they're going to use Luminar to do the actual processing, because I think if you spend some time with it, you're going to find that it is a lot more enjoyable, a lot more intuitive, and you're probably going to get a lot more done too, because you're not going to be bored to tears like in Lightroom. You might enjoy using Lightroom now, but once you use Luminar, I think you're going to see the difference big time here. Now, if you're a Mac user, whether you're frustrated with Lightroom or not, I think Luminar is definitely worth having a look at. It's not available until November 17, 2016, but you can pre-order it right now for just $59 US. When you think about it, that is ridiculously cheap. I mean, they really should be charging twice as much as that, and it would totally be worth it at that price. So $59 for this great program. And if you're already a MacFun customer, let's say you have Aurora HDR, you can get it for just $49. I mean, come on, $49, and you've got a great program here. That's just a no-brainer, if you're on a Mac, of course. Because for right now, unfortunately, it's not available for PC. So for me, I'm going to continue to cull in Photo Mechanic, catalog in Lightroom, and process in Luminar. I mean, that might change, but so far, I'm really enjoying what Luminar offers. And it just makes sense to me to do it that way. This is going to seem silly, but you know those before and after sliders that you see on web pages? They've got that in Luminar. And I don't know why, but I really enjoy that. I don't like having to hit a key and see a before and after. It's just so much easier to slide that slider across, you know, left and right, and compare what you've done versus your original photo. And that's part of the fun aspect of Luminar that I'm talking about. Little things like this that help make the day go faster and help make processing photos more enjoyable. So if you haven't checked out this program yet, hit the show notes for episode 122 at petapixel.com/podcast. Or visit them over at macfun.com/luminar. And that's fun spelled P-H-U-N. And no, this was not an ad. It's just a great program. And when I like something, I'm going to tell you about it. And when I don't like something, you know you're going to hear about it. There's some of that in this episode. As always. Next. Just a quick reminder that our friend Nigel Barker's show, Top Photographer, started airing on Adorama TV, and since we're photo nerds, this is definitely right up our alley. I mean, if you have to watch a program, why not one about photographers, right? So five photographers are competing in New York City for a bunch of awesome prizes worth over $50,000 US. They get to rub elbows with Nigel Barker, make some great contacts, and it looks like they're having a lot of fun. Well, except for the ones that have to go home. For this first episode, they had an action sports studio challenge, and it was definitely a challenge for a couple of them. It really shows that you don't know what you don't know until you know it, you know? And how comfortable we get doing what we've done many times before, and when you're thrown something that you haven't done, it can definitely fluster you and make you sweat. But it's important to do new things to grow as photographers, and we say that so many times here on the show. These days, when I shoot, it's usually sports because I enjoy it and I'm also limited on time. But when I was a photojournalist, I had to do it all. Being in a rut is not a great place to be in. And this episode shows just how useful it is to try something new and to do your best to make it work. Okay, some of them made it work. But hey, they had just 30 minutes to get the shot or risk being sent home. And they couldn't Photoshop them either. It had to be great in camera. It's a fun show. I'm looking forward to the next 4 episodes. And if you haven't seen it yet, definitely head on over to YouTube and check it out on Adorama TV's YouTube channel. Nigel Barker is awesome, of course, and he's a really nice guy. I've learned so much from him over the years, and I really think you guys are going to enjoy this show. I've got my favorite contestant, and I'd be interested in knowing who you guys think's going to win. Next. I recently told you about how Apple's new MacBook Pro laptops did away with all the ports that people needed, from the MagSafe power port, which is actually a safety feature, to the standard USB slots that we all know and have been using for many, many years. And oh yeah, they got rid of the SD card slot too. So now you're forced to buy a bunch of dongles, remember to bring them with you, hope they don't break, and no one's really excited about any of that. Ripping the Band-Aid quickly works when it's an actual Band-Aid, but in this case, ouch. Okay, even though it's annoying, this Apple fanboy, I'm talking about me, could get past the dongle thing in the name of progress, but come on, most of us still use SD cards, and having that slot built in was just so darn handy. The dongles for the cables are basically an adapted cable extension, but ditching the SD card slot means having to get a card reader, which now must sit beside your MacBook Pro, or it's sticking out really far. And that's not exactly like having a dongle which attaches to a cord that runs wherever else to whatever device that you've got it attached to. This is completely different. It was nice having something right there on the side and leaving the card reader at home for once. You know, those days, though, are gone. Thanks, Apple. So why did Apple remove the SD card slot? Well, according to the company's marketing senior vice president, Phil Schiller, in an interview with The Independent, he said, quote, "It's a bit of a cumbersome slot. You've got this thing sticking halfway out," end quote. Okay, since when was this a problem for anyone? I mean, it sticks out maybe a half an inch or so. That's really not a big deal. Now, though, you've got to get a card reader that's hanging out a lot farther off of your MacBook Pro. So explain that one to me. You've traded a half inch of something sticking out for, what, a good 3 to 4 inches or so? That just doesn't make any sense at all. A better reason would be the fact that SD isn't the only type of media card that's out there. But you know what? Years ago, Apple picked a winner, and that was SD. It's in my old MacBook Pro going back to 2011 or so. I mean, that thing's a beast, but the SD card slot's in it. And also, they're in the back of my iMacs as well. It's nice not having to have a card reader because it's already built into your computer. You know, it was one less thing to worry about. But I get it. Apple wants to move as many things as possible into the wireless realm, and then everything else can be a standardized USB Type-C slot. That makes a lot of sense. And of this, Schiller says, quote, "More and more cameras are starting to build wireless transfer into the camera. That's proving very useful. So we think there's a path forward where you can use a physical adapter if you want, or do wireless transfer," end quote. You know, I'd be with him on that if transferring photos wirelessly were actually easy and if it was fast, but they are neither. Not to mention, not everyone wants to tie up their camera waiting forever for the photos to transfer when they can just pop out that card, put it into their computer, and then use another card to keep on shooting. Very few people are going to transfer their photos off of their camera this way. Not here in 2016, at least. They'll just get an adapter, and we're right back to making things cumbersome, something that Apple claims was a reason for removing the SD card slot in the first place. You know? Face palm emoji here. Seriously. I love Apple, but they're making some goofy moves of late, I tell ya. A move that's not goofy, however, is their decision to slash the prices of its dongles, but unfortunately, this is just temporary. As I record this, their USB-C to USB adapter, which was $19 US, is now just $9. The Thunderbolt 3 to Thunderbolt 2 adapter has been reduced $20 to just $29. And the same with the SanDisk SD card reader that they sell. The one that's going to be sticking out of your computer now. There are a bunch more dongles that are now a fraction of what they cost before. So if you need one, even if you don't have a MacBook Pro right now, but you think you're going to get one soon, maybe it's a good idea to go purchase those dongles right now and save a few bucks. Actually, it's going to be a lot more than a few bucks. According to friends, if you've already purchased some of these, you may have received an email from Apple letting you know that the prices have dropped and your card is actually being credited. If you bought the adapters elsewhere, though, maybe not. I don't know. Either way, if you get a new MacBook Pro, you're going to have a bunch of dongles in your life. That is, until you upgrade your devices, which of course cost more money, and hopefully those have a Type-C connector. Then you'll be dongle-free. Next. Adobe Photoshop CC has been updated, and it's got a number of new features, one of which is universal search. I know, right? Is this what it's come to? Photoshop is more than a quarter of a century old now, and universal search is the new main feature in this update. Yeah, I'm definitely cranky this episode, but come on. I mean, has this been a highly requested feature or what? Personally, I can't see myself searching for anything in Photoshop. I mean, I'll give it a shot, but the results had better be spot on or I'm punching out of there. You have to be super motivated to drill through a bunch of results and find what might be helpful to you. And if it's not, are you going to ever use it again? I mean, it's like Siri on my iPhone. You guys know how I feel about her. I joke, but if you live inside Photoshop and use it day to day to create composites and such, and you need to find images in Adobe Stock, being able to search it right there in Photoshop is going to be helpful, and you can also license it right there as well. I applaud that kind of integration, but search in an app like Photoshop just isn't doing it for me. More useful, I think, is that now you're going to be able to edit things like the font face, the size, the alignment, and the color of type layers without having to open the characters panel. So that's going to further save people a lot of time, and that's always appreciated. I tell you, there was a time that I was all about Photoshop, and for much of the past couple decades or so, I've had it. But with Lightroom and other options out there, most of us just aren't in Photoshop like we used to be. But if you do, you're also going to enjoy that there's now support for scalable vector color fonts, aka SVGs. So if you wanted to add emojis and such to your Photoshop projects, you could. Please don't. Also helpful is that Face Aware Liquify now lets you independently adjust eyes, so that's pretty cool because not everyone has the same sized eyes, you know? And if you haven't played with Face Aware Liquify in general, you're definitely missing out because that is a solid 3 to 5 minutes of fun right there. Seriously though, Liquify is amazing these days. It used to be a joke, but now you can do so, so much with it. Also, Match Font is greatly improved, and together, all these things add up to useful features that help with productivity, and given that our attention spans are getting worse and worse over time, this is all going to be appreciated. You know, you're either a Photoshop person or you're not. You either love messing with adjustment layers, masks, and blending modes, or the thought of all of that makes smoke come out of your ears, like it does with me. I remember when Photoshop updates were huge and exciting. Now, though, we've got search updates to look forward to, I guess. So there's that. Next. All right, as promised, here's an update on those filmmakers who walked on the Grand Prismatic Spring in Yellowstone National Park this past May of 2016, causing nearly universal outrage over their complete disregard for the natural landscape that many enjoy photographing. You may recall that four Canadian filmmakers from High on Life Sunday Fun Days, which is a horrible name, were caught breaking the law as they filmed themselves, and now we've learned that three of the men could face actual jail time for their misdeeds. According to the Jackson Hole News and Guide, one of the men pled guilty to foot travel in a thermal area, yeah, that's apparently a thing, and disorderly conduct. For that, he's been sentenced to 5 years of unsupervised probation and must pay $8,000 US in fines. The other three men, however, pled not guilty so they could have new counsel appointed to them due to a reported conflict of interest. According to their former lawyer, Thomas Fleener, he's saying publicly that these young men are just completely misunderstood, those are his words, and if convicted, they could face time in the Bighorn County Detention Center for their crimes. Of this, he says, quote, "They're really nice, funny, smart 20-something professionals, and they travel around to show people how much fun they can have. They intended no harm in any of this." End quote. All right, now that's just silly. You know, there were signs posted, and these men who claim to respect the lands that they capture on film willfully ignored those signs and did something that many people over the years managed to do, and that was to stay off the Grand Prismatic Spring. You've got to wonder what is wrong with them that they felt it was just okay to break the rules and the law and to go out there when signs were clearly posted telling them not to. Just because they have a project that they want to put up on YouTube or whatever doesn't give you permission to just do what you want to do. I mean, that is beyond foolish. The sense of entitlement that some people have just blows my mind. You've heard me say it here before. Just because you can doesn't mean you should. And that is great advice all around right there. If everyone learned that, they would definitely keep themselves out of trouble in many circumstances. But these guys didn't care. They just went ahead and did it because they told themselves that it was okay. And it wasn't. Listen, I'm a nice guy, but if you're being an idiot, I'm going to tell you about it. And these guys are definitely idiots. There's no justification for what they did. And I'd really like to hear the argument from someone who's actually on their side, aside from their lawyers, of course, that would explain why it was okay for these men to break the law. Man, I'm cranky today, but you know what? This isn't a hey, you kids, get off my lawn kind of situation. This is a hey, you kids, get off the natural landscape that the rest of us would like to enjoy. Yellowstone National Park Superintendent Dan Wenk agrees with me, I think, saying, quote, "The judge's decision today sends a very clear message about thermal feature protection and safety. Hamish Cross's egregious actions damaged a world-class hot spring and risked his own life coupled with the lives of responding rangers. We look forward to the outcome of the case regarding the three remaining defendants," end quote. Now, make no mistake here, this is not just about preserving a natural landmark. This is also about money, of course. The Grand Prismatic Spring and other aspects of Yellowstone generate millions of dollars for that local economy there. There's always a dollar component, so let's not kid ourselves into believing that it's just about the natural landscape, because it's not. All right, all of that aside, these four arrogant individuals are finding out just what happens when you take it upon yourself to break the rules and the law and ruin what others hold dear. I don't think these guys are going to get much jail time, but this is certainly going to cost them financially, as it should. I'd like to thank you all for listening to episode 122 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Don't forget to check us out at petapixel.com/podcast for the show notes and to see what else we have for you. If you head on over there, you can leave us a voicemail question that we can answer here on the show. Or if you don't feel comfortable leaving a voicemail, feel free to email me at lensshark@gmail.com. And if you'd like to connect with me personally, hit me up on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook, where I'm Lensshark. That's LenSshark. All right, with that, I'll see you all in episode 123. Well, it's f8 and 250th of a second outside. It's time to shoot.
Please subscribe to the Petapixel Photography Podcast. My daddy is the host.